special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Let's get it on in. What's going on, folks? This is the Boxing Source Radio Show on the Golong Media Channel on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, James Bell, the boxing analyst for the Cold Hard Truth on Sports. Number to dial in is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press one key to get on cue and be able to talk live on the show. We got like a fairly busy show here today as we're going to have a few special guests on. Coming in at about 8 o'clock or the next within 30 minutes. We'll have a few guests on the show here to talk about a few things. A fairly busy show with that, and having a few announcements here and there as far as like news and notes, as pretty much had a week off last week, so pretty much getting right back into it here this week. What I'll do is just get in with a quick little break here. We're going to set things up, have a segment here to talk about general news in the boxing scene, and then we're going to have the guests on here at 8 o'clock and then continue with the boxing discussion there. So if you want to join in, once again, the number is 347-237-5539. That's 347-237-5539. We'll get to a quick break here. Just a reminder, you're listening to the Boxing Source Radio Show on the Golong Channel on Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, all, this is Matthew Long with the Cold Hard Truth on Sports and the Triangle Offense. I just wanted to take some time to tell you about Pest Bear, a wonderful company. They've been around for 20 plus years. They have over 11 branches in Florida. Great licensed, certified specialists, and guess what? They do more than pest control. They also take care of termites as well as lawn care, sprinkler systems, and much, much more. Call today, 1-800-PESTBEAR. That's 1-800-737-8232.
WCSB Sports and MRN Broadcasting, powered by blogtalkradio.com.
What's good, folks? What's good? What's good? Just getting right back here into it with the Boxing Source Radio Show here on the Golong Media Channel on Blog Talk Radio. Like I said, number to dial in is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press one key to get on cue, and you'll be able to talk in live on the show. Just got to pretty much catch up here with a few news and notes around the world of boxing. We had a 1 week hiatus there, so we didn't necessarily get into what happened, you know, over the week of August 5th. And it was something there where, you know, we were looking towards what was happening on the next ESPN telecast. There is, you know, Top Rank had their second ESPN telecast on Saturday, August 5th, when you had main event Vasyl Lomachenko against Miguel Mariaga for the WBO Super Featherweight Championship that Lomachenko had. And this was over in Los Angeles, Microsoft Theater. Had the co-feature Raymundo Beltran going up against Brian Vasquez. So, you know, pretty much we're, you know, looking at these two fights, seeing if we were going to see a few things here from first Raymundo Beltran. So, you know, it had the little background there with Beltran is that he basically fighting to basically stay in the U.S. So he is, you know, pretty much a you know, I would say he's kind of like a guy that's, I wouldn't necessarily say under the radar, so to speak, there at lightweight. He's, you know, been in a few good scraps here and there. He, you know, he fought against Ricky Burns a few years ago, fought to a draw with that. He fought Terrence Crawford in 2014 for the WBO lightweight championship then, and lost a unanimous decision there. But since 2014, he's been undefeated up to the point, like four wins, no losses, and one no decision in 2015 before fighting Brian Vasquez there at the Microsoft Theater. And Vasquez was there at 35-2. You know, he faced Javier Fortuna for the WBA Super Featherweight Championship in 2015, and was an interim Super Featherweight Championship before that. Just had two losses in his career. Both were world title fights before going up against Raymundo Beltran. And, I mean, it looked like, you know, to me that, you know, Beltran came in there as a better fighter. Looked like he was going to be the, you know, the more skilled fighter. But, you know, after the first three rounds or so, it kind of looked like he took the foot off the gas, so to speak, with that. And he, you know, I would say kind of like let Brian Vasquez get back into the fight. And, you know, with that, he, you know, I kind of like, you know, saw him as not really, you know, having a significant win, or kind of like make it significant that he was necessarily clearly winning the fight. He was a better fighter, but it was like something to where if he put a little bit more effort, it would have been a lot more definitive than it looked out there. So to me, you know, with that, he kind of, you know, he kind of like made Vasquez look like he was more into the fight than he should have been, specifically when, like, Beltran looked to be a little bit, I wouldn't say a little bit bigger, but significantly bigger than Brian Vasquez at the night of the fight. He won it by a majority decision, you know, two scores of 96-94, and you know, one judge had it even at 95-95. So two judges had it 6-4, and then 95-95, pretty much a draw there. So Beltran ended up winning, you know, winning that fight. moving to 34-7-1, getting there a couple of minor lightweight championships in the process, and Brian Vasquez ended up falling to 35-3. Getting into the main event there that happened on August 5th was Vasyl Lomachenko defending the WBO Super Featherweight Championship against Miguel Mariaga. This was, to me, it seemed like it was a filler, kind of like a filler fight there. Vasyl Lomachenko was looking for opponents, over the past few months, and nobody at the time could step up to fight him there for August 5th. There was a talk of him fighting Orlando Salido on August 5th, but Salido ended up holding out, waiting for another opportunity to take that next shot against Vasyl Lomachenko to, have a rematch where Salido was able to defeat Lomachenko in Lomachenko's second professional fight. So Bob Arum was able to find Miguel Mariaga there that was at 25-2 coming into the fight. On April 22nd, he fought undefeated Oscar Valdez and ended up losing by KO there. And that was for the WBO Featherweight Championship. And so he ended up going to the next division up to fight Vasyl Lomachenko to basically have this Super Featherweight title fight. And everybody knew it was like a mismatch from the get-go. There was, kind of like times where it looked like Vasyl Lomachenko like slacked off a bit. He had like a few openings here and there that, Mariaga was able to, catch Vasyl Lomachenko, a few times and, got a few, few significant punches in, there to Vasyl Lomachenko. It wasn't like anything that was very significant to put Vasyl Lomachenko in any type of danger or whatnot. But it was something to, to say that, okay, Vasyl Lomachenko can get hit here and there. He could, there are a couple of times where he could be open to a few shots if you, catch him slipping. And so that's what it looked like, in a couple of rounds that were going on in this particular fight here between Miguel Mariaga and Vasyl Lomachenko. But to me, it was, basically a matter of time before Vasyl Lomachenko was going to take over and, end up overwhelming Miguel Mariaga. And, I mean, to me, this thing, it was just something to where they kind of like extended that particular fight there. Just so that, it could get more, I think Lomachenko could get more rounds in. But he ended up, overwhelming Miguel Mariaga. He, scored a knockdown, at the end of the round there. And, what ended up happening was, it basically was something where, he basically overwhelmed Miguel Mariaga, and Miguel Mariaga's corner ended up, stopping the fight. And just having Vasyl Lomachenko move up to 9 wins and 1 loss there. So, I mean, to me, it's something to where it was kind of like a transitional type of fight. It wasn't anything to where Vasyl Lomachenko was going to be tested you know, so to speak, which is something that was a transitional type of fight. So, I mean, to me, I don't know what to make out of, you know, that fight between those two. I mean, I thought I would, you know, see something more between Vasyl Lomachenko if he was able to get that fight with Orlando Salido. And now it seems like that Salido fight may end up happening later on this year instead of having these potential matchups that have been talked about the instant that the Vasyl Lomachenko-Miguel Mariaga fight was over with. Real quick, I'm going to have a caller in here before we get this special guest on. Area code 205, what's going on with you?
Hey, what's going on, Zane? This is Mike Grady. How you doing, man?
Doing good, Mike. Just been having a, you know, busy weekend here, just trying to, you know, catch things up here and there, but you're ready to talk boxing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I heard you talking about Lomachenko fight.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it's like a stay busy fight. I feel like I'm paraphrasing what you said, but it was a stay busy-ish type fight. And if I recall, when Nicholas Walter fought Mariaga, like, what did his win look like against Mariaga?
Yeah, I mean, he got the knockout there against Mariaga.
Okay.
And, well, I mean, it was like, not the knockout, but he got like the unanimous decision there in 2015.
Okay, unanimous decision.
All right. Basically, and he nearly got like a, you know, he nearly got a shutout win on one of the judges' scorecards in that fight. So it wasn't really a close fight, you know, not really a close fight between Walters and Mariaga.
Yeah.
So, I mean, looking at that, you know, that comparison where, you know, Lomachenko basically whitewashed Walters, but given the circumstances, that was kind of expected. You know, Walters wasn't completely into the fight, for one, but, I mean, still, I feel that, you know, Lomachenko would have still won that fight anyway. But, you know, to see, like, somebody like Mariaga, who, you know, ended up losing Nicholas Walters for one, in 2015, and then ended up, you know, losing his previous fight before even stepping up against Lomachenko, and moving up in weight before, you know, fighting Lomachenko. So I didn't really see, you know, that much coming off of this fight, you know, other than, you know, having Lomachenko being shown on ESPN.
Yeah, I think ESPN a good look for Top Rank. They at least getting that exposure. And, you know, like, I know it's going to be a lot of eyes, like, looking at them. And, yeah, to your point, yeah, it would have been interesting to see Walters more motivated. He would have lost anyway, but, I mean, he probably would have done more than just pinch, you know, like, Lomachenko. You know, at least Mariaga, like, had his eye, like, looking. I mean, you know, he hit him a couple times, you know. Which you can't say the same thing for Walters, so you can't. Walters didn't hit him at all. I mean, his spirit was broken. You could see that, though. But, again, you know, they're talking about the Garcia fight. So that would be interesting. And, of course, the fight I really want to see is the Cuban.
Yeah, Rigo.
But, Rigondeaux, yep. But, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what weight that would be at and, you know, if there would be a catch weight, all that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, to me, all of that to me is like a lot of, you know, a lot of talk because we all know the situation that's going on here in the boxing game, especially with Aaron being involved. He's not going to have, you know, somebody like Vasyl Lomachenko who could be his – supposed next superstar guy in his stable, the way that he, you know, the way that he treats, you know, the way he treats Vasyl Lomachenko. He's not going to have a matchup against somebody, you know, that's not either within the stable or somebody that, you know, could have a potential of giving Vasyl Lomachenko another loss. So, you know, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Michael Garcia was under Top Rank at one point before having that, you know, that 18 months or so layoff before getting signed again to get back in the ring. So, you know, a potential match between Lomachenko and Garcia, I'm not sure if that's going to be something that's going to be in the cards here real soon, for one. And then this whole thing with Guillermo Rigondeaux, I mean, that's been talked about for, you know, almost 2 years now. Even when, Rigondeaux was, just trying to look for folks to fight when he couldn't even get Carl Frampton in the ring or Scott Quigg in the ring to fight him. So, I mean, those are the type of things that kind of like put him, I would say Rigondeaux in a bad situation, because he's not able to get those fights against a Lomachenko or against a Leo Santa Cruz or anybody like that, because, nobody wants to, take that risk against them.
Yep, you're right. I mean, I'm not calling it a low reward, but I'm not, it's too much of a risk. The opportunity cost, you would be that man as far as, boxing enthusiasts, but I don't think people, the payoff for beating him, I'm not sure how much, the powers that be, how much stock they would put into beating Rigondeaux. I don't know, I mean, you'll be the man, don't get me wrong, but
yeah.
What do you think people will get from that, like boxing-wise? I mean, they get the respect from boxing people, but...
Right. Yeah, it's like, I mean, people within the boxing circles know how good Guillermo Rigondeaux is. Even with him getting up in age, he still, was able to be one of the most skilled boxers in the sport. And so, with that, it's something to where if someone is able to beat Rigondeaux, they would have that notoriety of, beating one of those guys as the most decorated Cuban amateur boxer in history. So, I mean, if I was like any one of those notable guys that are within that weight class, within featherweight or super featherweight or whatever it is, I would, have that, try to get that opportunity to go after Guillermo Rigondeaux and say, hey, I don't mind facing you here. I know what your background is. I know how good you were. Let's see if you could, test it out against me and see if I could, and I'll see if I could beat you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But hey, in order to do that, you're risking your jaw broke.
Well, that's one thing. But the other thing is it's like you're losing to, somebody as decorated as Rigondeaux. So it's not like, it's a, unbelievable upset or something like that,
If you lose
to Rigondeaux, it's not like an upset. So.
You're right.
I don't see what the issue would be.
But I'm more so concerned on what type of loss you would have to Rigondeaux, though. Because I'm being funny when I say breaking jaws, but he literally be hurting people.
Right. And the thing about it is that he kind of like waits on it, too, because he would have been able to – he was going to be able to do the same thing in that last fight that he had, after that first round. But, he ended up, having that little snafu go on there with his opponent. And so that didn't – end in a spectacular fashion as some would have, wanted it to, to have. So they still have it as him getting a knockout. So yeah, they haven't reversed it. As far as I know.
Yeah, the way
they haven't reversed it.
Made everybody out. This dude was about to get suspended disqualified.
Nah, well, actually, they ended up making it a no contest. The athletic commission ended up reversing that and made it a no contest. So,
But you know,
but I mean,
had he not
but people knew that they knew that, you know, Rigondeaux was going to beat Flores anyway, so.
Yeah.
You know.
But you know, had Lampley not brought up all of that, then
right,
they would have probably left it like it was. The only reason why they changed it is because the dude said all that stuff on camera. Well, he's like, well, if that happened, then I guess we should change it. You know, he pretty much put his foot in his mouth. That's why they had to do something.
Yep. I mean, to me, it was like Roy Jones said, it was like Moises Flores kind of like milked it. You know what I mean? When he got hit, he kind of like milked it. It wasn't like something to it. Like, compare that to, you know, what happened with Andre Durell. You know, that was something that was, you know, kind of like different. You know. But here, it wasn't like, you know, Flores was seriously hurt. You know what I mean?
So
but,
I took my
you know,
hair off. You said compared to Andre Durell and what else?
No, like the situation with Guillermo Rigondeaux and Moises Flores was different to, you know, what happened at the end of that round with Andre Durell and Jose Uzcategui. Where, you know, Uzcategui actually hurt Durell. You know.
Oh, you don't think Rigondeaux hurt guy? You don't think he hurt him?
Nah, not that serious, no. Mm-mm. Nah. It wasn't like a punch that like really seriously, you know, really seriously tagged Moises Flores to me. Because my thing was, he was still up. Like, Flores was still up, like, almost like a half a second before he even went down to the canvas. So, I mean, my thing was, I thought he wasn't really hurt in that instance.
It was like, you know, the guy with Mike Tyson who took the mouthpiece out?
Kind of like that. Where, yeah, he kind of went to the canvas and then just, you know, just laid there, just to lay there, because he knew what the situation was. You know, so I'm like, that's why, yeah, I think that's why, you know, it really didn't look as convincing then, but like you were saying, Jim Lampley kind of like pushed the issue and, you know, had the influence to where it turned from a knockout to a no contest. There, you know, after the fight was done, you know, so that was my thing on that. You know, waiting a couple of minutes here before our guests get in. Did you catch the co-feature of that fight that had Raymundo Beltran on there?
Yes. Remind me what happened. I forgot.
It was like a majority decision, 96-94 on two cards and 95-95. To me, Beltran was like the much bigger fighter in that fight. And, you know, after the first, you know, five or six rounds or so, he was, you know, basically the better fighter and showed that he was the better fighter. But, you know, after the sixth round or whatever it is, he kind of like took his foot off the gas and, you know, let his guy, like, get back into the fight. And that was just something to where he shouldn't have let him, like, really get back into that fight.
Yeah. So, okay, I remember now. So I was feeling, yes, he definitely let up off the gas, but I didn't look at it critically enough to see whether or not, like, the guy was winning the rounds. But do you think he was winning the later rounds?
Vasquez... To me, he was putting more effort into the round. So, I mean, that's why it's like if you put in more effort in the fight and, you know, your opponent is kind of like letting off the gas, even if you're not like seriously hurting your opponent, as long as you're doing more, you're still like kind of, you know, you're kind of like getting the rounds in or getting the win, you know, for those rounds. So, I think that's what ended up happening there is that, you know, Beltran ended up letting Vasquez do a little bit more And while he wasn't necessarily hurting Beltran, you know, Beltran was not really doing much to, you know, kind of like get himself to a point to where he would be able to win the rounds.
So
I mean, that's
who,
like, what is that?
No, I'll remember my question. That's like what? My question is, I'm changing the subject sort of, so that's why I remember.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so, I mean, that was the thing there. I mean, Beltran could have been, impressive enough to, like, kind of get a significant, you know, significant decision win there to kind of put himself there as getting his name up as far as, like, a lightweight contender. My thing is that, he has to see if he could get, like, a title shot here soon. There in the lightweight division. I'm not sure, you know, where he could, you know, get in at for, lightweight. I mean, he's there as the number two contender for the IBF and the WBO belt and the WBC belt as well. But when you have, like, Linares and Issa Jr. As the champions, I'm not sure if he's going to be able to get an opportunity through that. So Terry Flanagan may be the route, but he'll have to, you know, end up traveling overseas probably to get that shot against Terry Flanagan. If they're able to, like, you know, get him to be approved to, you know, have that fight. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So what's the guy, what's the fighter's name who's fighting to get, like, his fighter exemption?
Yeah, that's him. Beltran.
Okay. I was making sure that was him. Yeah. And so that's interesting because you're right halfway through the fight, he was acting like he just kind of, which he did win the fight. And I still feel like even in the later rounds, even though the guy was trying harder, he was pretty much I wasn't looking at it, like, very hard to critique. Like, I wasn't judging the rounds. I'm going to say that. So, but when I saw the scores, I was like, oh, wow, a lot closer than what I thought it should have been. But I was not scoring the rounds, and so I wasn't, like, counting for it. But the guy was putting up more effort. I have to give that. And so to that point, he should not ever do that. He should always come out there, and even though, you know, it was like past the whatever halfway point, he kind of felt like he had it won, he should never let off the gas. He's still trying to get the fighter exemption, like, because that would have been a year later, you know, and, you know, that's the story he's going for. Like, he fighting for his family. That would have been bad.
Yeah, like, to me, I mean, I would have like, had it to where, you know, I'd be impressive enough to have more, promoters or managers be more interested in getting you into more fights, especially like the potential fights that I mentioned there for the world lightweight championships that are out there. Specifically with Terry Flanagan, I think it would be, you know, a possible matchup if Flanagan doesn't, you know, face the number one contender, who is, you know, Felix Verdejo, which, you know, that fight, I'm not sure if they're going to be able to go forward with that fight. I think they had, like, that fight was supposed to happen, but I think an injury kind of, like, delayed that fight from happening. You know, so yeah, it's like, I'm not sure, like, where he's going to be, able to get in.
His only loss is to Terrence Crawford, right?
Beltran, I mean, he had, who, Beltran?
Yeah, who did he lose to?
Well, that was his last loss. He's had a few losses.
Okay.
That was his last loss, was to Terrence Crawford, but he's been, out there, a few times, man. Had, like, a couple of early losses in his career, and, you know, patch here and there where he's, you know, kind of lost for minor championships as well. So, I mean, he's kind of like put in his thing there where he's, he's kind of like trying to stay in there and stay in the game a little bit. so that he could get his shots here and there. Let me see here. I may have somebody that could get in here. So what I'm going to do here is, like, I'm going to see if I can get my special guest in here in a little bit. Just have, like, a quick transitional break, and then we'll get our special guest in here to talk boxing. So we're going to get that going here, but let's get into a commercial and then get right back into it. Once again, this is the Boxing Source Radio Show on the Go Long Media channel on Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, all, this is Matthew Long, the Executioner, here on the Cold Hard Truth on Sports. Now, I know you've heard me talk about the Touch Pro Basketball on my shows before. My boy, Tony Greer, is the inventor of the ball. If you're out there training and playing basketball and you don't have this ball, you're missing out, because it's going to help you improve your hand-eye coordination, your dribbling, and your shooting skills. So go today and get the Touch Pro Basketball at touchproball.com.
Sports Radio.
Get out of ATL. Got young ones chopping that thing, baby. Swift feet, full surface. Come on.
All right. We are getting right back into it here, live on the Boxing Source Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. We're here live, and we're pretty much having our special guest on here coming up live. Just getting them in here. Let's see if they're on. 202, you're on with us?
Yes, we are. We are. Coach Floyd here.
All right. So,
Kobe told
just giving a little brief here intro here. We got Coach Seymour, Floyd Seymour over here. He's here in the DMV area, pretty much in Clinton, Maryland. But he has a Caribbean background. So, real quick, there, Coach Floyd, I want you to talk about that here, real quick.
What's up, man? This is Coach Floyd. Right now I'm one of the national coaches for the Bahamas. Also, I'm working with a couple of Bajans up here in the Clinton, Maryland area. Right now I got little Jabali. First of all, let me say Kobe Soldier Breedy, who's 10-0 as a pro, 130-pounder. Also, his younger brother is up here in training camp getting ready to go to the World Games in Germany, which is this 25th of August. Over in Germany. So he's up here for a week. There's a lot going on, man. Also, I'm getting ready to go to Germany as well to my fighter, Jerome Quigley. He's fighting for another title up in Germany on the 26th of August. Sorry.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we got
busy,
like a lot going down right there.
Yeah.
So, real quick here. I mean, like you were saying, that it got like a, you know, a couple of guys there, which, you know, pair of brothers, Kobe Soldier Breedy, you know, out of Bridgetown, Barbados, and his younger brother, Jabali Breedy, with Kobe being in the pro ranks right now, and his younger brother, Jabali, is going to be in the AIBA championships. So it's going to be in Hamburg, Germany, here, starting at the end of August here. So, first, I wanted to, you know, get started with Jabali. So, if you can, you'll be able to talk about that here a little bit.
Hello, good night. I'm Jabali Breedy. I'm from Barbados. I'm training here in the United States of America in Washington, D.C. I'm getting
all right,
ready for
all right,
the
there, Jabali. Go ahead.
First, I want to give a good thanks to God for bringing me at this position right now. I want to shout out my Bajan fans that was on my support, on my sponsors, on the coaches that was there for me all the time.
That's what's up. That's what's up. Now, I mean, I see here that, you know, in your amateur background, like you were starting back in 2012, you've, you know, been finishing first in a lot of tournaments, you know, a lot of, you know, national tournaments in Barbados, junior tournaments, and all of that. And then, you know, eventually getting up here to 2017 where you were able to get a spot here in the AIBA Championship. So talk a little bit about, you know, how you were able to, you know, work your way up to getting to the AIBA Championships.
I was working hard. It was hard work, just training every day. Just coming to the gym, watching the big boys train, and let's say, man, I have to do my thing. Just work hard. Traveling the world, around the world, seeing different places. Man, say, keep going with this stuff, man.
Yeah, yeah. So how excited are you to, you know, get up there over to Hamburg and be a part of the World Boxing Championships over in Hamburg, Germany?
I'm very excited because it's my first time being right here at this position we're at now. Training with world champions, just telling me, giving me good advice, telling me different styles, different opponents, how to face them. And I'm real grateful for that.
And yeah, so you're like learning on the fly from different pro fighters out here in the D.C. area.
Yes, sir.
Got it. So far, you know, what has been like the experience that you've like remembered the most, you know, being over here stateside and training with a lot of these, you know, pro fighters that are out here in the DMV area, as, you know, there's like a lot of history as far as like professional boxers here in the Washington, D.C. area. So if you want, just tell us about, you know, who you work with or who you worked around here while preparing for the World Games.
Yeah, I'm working with the Gary Russells, the family, and they're giving me good advice, telling me how to face different opponents when I go to these games, and I'm really excited to go to this game, have a toolbox. I know what we're going to do, man. I'm so excited.
Yeah. That's what's up. Now, you know, you have your older brother there, Kobe Abreede, Kobe at Soldier Breedy, and you were mentioning, you know, working with Gary Russell Jr. and the Russell family. You know, you have Gary Russell Jr., you have Antoine Russell, you have Antonio Russell. And here with Kobe Abreede, you know, your older brother, you know, also coming out of, you know, Bridgetown, Barbados. His last professional fight was, you know, over in the MGM National Harbor as part of the card with the Russell family, getting the unanimous decision win over Wilfredo Garriga. So, Kobe, if you're here with us, if you can, like, talk with us about a little bit about that little experience you had against Wilfredo Garriga and, you know, what's upcoming for you here real soon.
All right, first of all, I want to give a shout-out, you know, to my people, my coaches, my trainers. I want to give thanks for God for making everything happen and possible. I want to give a shout-out to my Bajan people, my American people, my Caribbean, the whole world, all the Navy, the Army, the military people, you know what I mean? I want to give a special shout-out to Gary Russell and his family and team because, you know, they gave me an opportunity and I did what I had to do. Yeah, to answer your question, the MGM was a great experience, you know. Me being coming out from Barbados, you know, having a good amateur background, me fighting the MGM was a very great experience. But just know I've been traveling all around the world. So, you know, it was just a big name, just a big event. And me and my coach, you know, we've been training, been practicing days and days, nights and nights for our time from climbing the ladder. So,
right.
You know how cold this soldier breed do it. You know, I'm a soldier. You know, I was ready to go to war. I'm always ready to go to war. I stay in the jungle. I stay swimming with the sharks, you know. You know how I do it.
Right. So, yeah, like you were saying, you were coming in there from Barbados, you know, being a part of the Barbados national team there a few years ago before turning professional. So, like you were saying there, you know, being a soldier, you had like a military background, you know, before, you know, pretty much getting into the amateur boxing game. Is that correct?
Yes, please.
How was that, like, you know, being in the military prepared you to, you know, first start in the amateur boxing game and then eventually turn into the professional ranks?
Man, before I joined the Army, I was always boxing. You know, my great-great-grandfather was Baby Smiles. He was, like, one of the best boxers in the Caribbean. Then my grandfather used to box. Then my dad, you know. Then I started doing it. Then my brother started doing it. And after I finished high school, I just wanted to do more. I didn't want it to be a part of the streets and doing whatever young kid wanted to do. I just felt I had a bigger desire. So I made my mind. I said, I'm just join the Army. So that was the only way for me to, like, actually do boxing and still, you know, get a little stipend and stuff like that. But the Army did a very good thing for me, you know. It made me disciplined. It kept me hungry. That's why I'm a soldier. That's why me and my coach, we never go back and forth. Everything he tells me to do, I just do it because the Army just disciplined me so much. So when I try and convert it to boxing, it'd be easy. Like, I already know I got to go to war. And no matter what, I know it's going to benefit me at the end of the day, because when I go in the ring, I go to war. So whoever want me, they know they coming in the ring with a dude that been in the jungle. I'm like Rambo, man. You know what I mean? I'm like Rambo. You got me in the trees. I'm like a bat at night. You don't see me. I'm camouflage. I'm like tent. When you look inside the car, you can't see me.
Yeah, exactly. No doubt. So, just trying to see here, what's coming up here in the future here for you? You know, after this fight that you've had with Wilfredo Garriga, you know, we're trying to see if what the next time you're going to be in the ring will be. So, if you can, you could speak about that.
Yeah, I'll be in the ring September 8th in California. And right now I'm currently in camp with Gary Russell and his family. I want to give a shout out to Gary Russell again. And you know how soldier always training. You know, we in the jungle. You know, my brother in the jungle with me. You know, they call him the new B. So, you know, he ain't no hot. I'm a soldier. He the B. He the bumblebee. I'm the soldier. So I'm the warrior. You know, he just like stinging people. You know what I mean? I plant grenades and I plant bombs and blow them up and stuff like that. That's me. But yeah, I'm a soldier. I'm just ready to go to war whenever. I'm just waiting for my day. My day is coming soon. Five more fights, world champ. Ten more fights. We just waiting, making the right move. Me and my coach, my team. We just waiting for the day for me to get a title shot. And whoever's out there, you know, who got the belts, we going after them. Because, you know, the soldier, he war ready. I'm ready to go in the desert storm. Yep. I'm coming. When I come, I'm bringing the whole tournament. I want the whole Caribbean people, the American people, all the soldiers, the Navy, everybody. I just want the whole pack. Everybody, we coming together. I'm just going to dominate the world. I just want to be the world champion. Right now, me and my little brother, we on the road of making history. We about to make the Caribbean and the Caribbean shine. We about to do this for the black people. We're doing this for everybody. We about to destroy the world. I'm out.
Yeah, true. Now, one more question here before I get back to Coach Floyd. This is actually for both you, Kobia, and Jabali. You know, what is it like to, you know, have your brother, you know, alongside with you, you know, to train for, you know, these different boxing matches? I know that, you know, y'all have had an extensive family background there in the boxing game, but, you know, once you had Jabali started to get into it, I mean, I think that, you know, whole experience was a little bit different for you. So if y'all can, see if y'all could talk about, you know, having, you know, your brother right alongside you training with you.
It's good. It's a good thing because it's like, you know, I just want to show him what I'd be going through. The training and what me and Coach Floyd be doing, the things I learned, the things I have in my toolbox, we just transfer it and convert it to give him so he could be a better fighter, because he got it. He just need to know his tools, know his weapons, so he could perfect it when he go to the World Games in Germany. So when he go to Germany, he just be stinging everybody out the ring. They just don't want to fight him. They be bobbing and weaving. They be getting stinging. They want honey. Yeah, so true. Yeah, so we be ready though. How was the experience?
The experience watching my brother train, just giving more motivation, telling myself, yeah, I gotta keep going. I want to get far. I want to be a world champion. I want to be just like my brother, man.
Gotcha, no doubt. Now, getting back here with Coach Floyd Seymour. Of course, you've had an extensive training background here. You know, you have the Breedy brothers here with you from Barbados, and then you've trained a different fighters. Over the course of your coaching career, what is it like to have these different guys come to your gym? One, and then two, having the experiences with other boxers out there. Because, I mean, you've told me about, your whole experience here with the Breedy family. And actually, I want you to start with that, like how that came about, because that's part of a story that kind of like came full circle for you. Once you started yourself as an amateur boxer, coming out of the Bahamas, and then later on, like years later, here you are with the Breedy brothers. So I want you to talk about how that came about.
Okay, cool. When they say fate, it's fate. Fate is right there, and it's right there. When I was 16 years old, living in the Bahamas, I had a fight in the Caribbean Games in Barbados. And the crazy thing about it is I lost. I got a silver medal. I got robbed in Barbados. I'm saying it. I got robbed. All the Bajans out there, let them know I got robbed. The guy robbed me. I was fighting this guy named Michael Thomas. But in the background, Kobe Breedy's father, he was fighting on the same team. He's fighting on the Barbados team. So you could see him in the background just sitting down, but he was a lighter weight division to me. And my thing was like, man, imagine when I was 16 years old and his father was the same age, because me and his father is the same age. And I just told his father, listen, man, 30 years from now, your unborn son will be living with me in America, both your kids. To me, that was crazy. Fast forward, I was in China with Gary Russell, when Gary Russell made the Olympic team in 2008. Bahamas made me one of their national coaches, and we went to India in 2010. So in 2010 in India, I met up with Colby Soldier Breedy. He was a strong fighter from Barbados. He's good, rough around the edges. I thought he's a good fighter. So in 2011, I think we was in Panama, we became better friends. Then we went to Ecuador, and I watched this kid win a medal. Then we went to Russia, and I'm like, whoa, this kid can really fight. And I really needed somebody to work with the Bahamas guy that I was training with, Valentino. And I was like, man, Kobe, I like you a lot. After the Olympics, 2012 Olympics, I want you to come to America, and turn pro or whatever. So he went back to his Barbados consul and the embassy and whatever, and 2013, he came over here, but we decided not to go pro, to stay amateur. So me and him went to Scotland, and he, came fifth at the Commonwealth Games. Right after that, we went ahead and turned pro in 2014. And, man, from 2014 to now, like the kid said, he's a soldier. When he's on the move, he's on the move. And he kept telling me about his little brother. I'm like, man, your little brother. Like, whatever, man, whatever. Here it is, earlier this year, his little brother is the only boxer in the whole of the Caribbean Islands to make the World Games. Right now, I think the U.S. have six boxers I think they're over in Germany now, competing in the World Games, six boxers. And I don't think they have nobody at the 119-weight division. And Jabari Breedy is the only boxer in the whole Caribbean, from Jamaica, Barbados, Bahamas, Guyana, St. Vincent, that made the games, made the team. And he's up here in training camp with us, man. And, my thing is I'm excited for him. He's meeting a lot of top fighters. Like we said, the Russell brothers, Chop Chop, Michael Reed. He's with all the local fighters, the Peterson, Lamont Peterson, Barry Hunter, Jim. He's meeting everyone. So everybody's putting a little two cents in. And the thing about it, like I told people, if you want to be a champion, you stick around champions. You want to be great, you stick around people who's great. You want to be a bum, find bums. So now, you know, from my experience, if you want to make a great fighter, create a champion, you keep him around champions. And that's kind of what I'm doing right now. At the same time, training him, keeping his mind right. So once you go to Germany, if he win a medal or if he win the gold, he'll be the best boxer in the whole world. At the same time, with his brother, you know, his brother's 10-0, and we already set a course because before he hits 20 fights, we want him to fight for a world title or to win a world title. And right now, our next fight should be on, I think, HBO in September. I'm not sure. I have to ask Mr. Russell what we're going to be fighting on. But, you know, we're on a ladder climbing, and anybody who's a professional fighter knows you have to climb the ladder. You have to climb the ladder. And
yeah,
that's what's up, man. I mean, that's the journey that I've had with the Breedy brothers and also their father. Because, like I said, I met their father when I was 16 years old. And now, it's funny, I have both the brothers here training them in Maryland. So that's what I say, it's fate. You know, fate happens. And not only that, their great-great-grandfather was a boxer, you know. Yeah. Things happen, man. And 2-1, I think both of these guys are going to be champions.
Yep, no doubt, no doubt. Now, I want to see if I could get in a couple of callers in here with us to see if they got any questions. Got 205 with us. Mike, you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Hey, yeah, Mike, you got a question for?
Yeah, I can think of a question. Guys, thank you for coming on to the show. I guess I have to tell you, you have a new fan, and I will definitely look you guys up. Oh, no problem. You have, like, any social media or anything I can follow you at?
Oh, my staff, and let me get Kobe says on his first.
And you could follow me at Kobe or Soldier Brady.
Instagram or Facebook?
Facebook, Instagram.
And at Kobe or Soldier Brady. Okay, that's Instagram. You want to spell it?
I'll spell it C as in cow, O as in boy, B as in Breedy.
Okay. Okay. C O B I A Soldier Breedy. B R E E D Y. Okay, and his brother Jabali Breedy is social media.
You can follow me at Jabali Breedy. At hotmail.com, JABALABREDY.
Okay, that's
cool.
JABALI, Breedy, BREEDY. Okay,
gotcha.
That's his Instagram. My Facebook is Floyd Seymour. That's like Pretty Boy Floyd, Floyd, Seymour, Seymour. And my Instagram is a coach, Floyd Seymour. Okay? Social media.
Gotcha. Yeah, so I guess this is an old question too. So what would you guys say as far as coming up? What was your like toughest thing to handle as far as, you know, being boxers? I guess you guys have the lineage to be boxers, but what was your, like, toughest, like, learning curve or the most, you know, difficult thing that you had to overcome in coming up?
Boxers?
Okay, that's how Kobe told you really first. What's up for you, sir?
Tough.
Growing up, becoming a boxer.
Man, the military, man.
Can we talk about
Going through the recruiting, like how they be having you, like in a 6-month drill recruiting for 6 months. So you can't see no friends, can't see no family. You just gotta work. You just gotta do the drills and learn the march, the drills, learn the codes and all that. So
that was tough in boxing.
That was tough
because you had to box. In order to be in the military, you had to box. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to
Jabali.
Okay, let's try
Jabali.
What's up for you,
Jabali? The street life, man. I was in a gang, man. One time I got locked up. I was in the cell for 3 days, and I tell myself, I got to make a decision here, boxing or the street life. So I tell myself, I chose boxing.
And it changed your life.
It changed my life, man. Look where I am now, in D.C., Washington, D.C.
Cool.
For me, Floyd Seymour.
Yeah.
Let me see. Tough. Yeah, it was tough for us. Growing up in the Bahamas, not having much to train with, and just training hard and just having a dream. And my whole thing was just dreaming to be a champion, you know, from a kid. And when I was 21, I moved over here with Sugar Leonard's management team. And I'm in the gym with all the greats, Sean B. Mitchell, Joppy, William Joppy, Keith Holmes, Riddick Bowe's in the gym. You know, you got Lennox Lewis coming through the gym. So I'm just was like a little kid just watching all these champions. But later in life, I found out that it wasn't about me being the champion. It was about me having champions. And once I stopped boxing, you know, I had to find myself again. And by finding myself was helping kids. So helping kids to go through, you know, not to go through the things I went through as a boxer. So, you know, that was tough for me. You know, growing up as a boxer and not having the tools and materials to train with and to have. So now, you know, just training regular kids off the street and, you know, regular people, just helping them with their experience and helping them to be better people. Stay fit, stay in shape, stay healthy. Or if they want to be boxers, become boxers. That's my story.
Definitely. Appreciate it.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, like y'all were saying, y'all were able to give out your social media connects, of course, through Instagram. You have Coach Floyd Seymour, all one word. You have Cobia Soldier Breedy, all one word. And I think Jabali, I'm not sure if you have like an Instagram account or not. Do you have an Instagram account?
Yes, sir.
And what is that?
Yeah.
Jabali Breedy, 2006.
Jabali Breedy, 2006.
Yeah.
All right, Jabali Breedy, 2006. So, you know, I'll be able to, you know, push y'all out there so that people can follow y'all on Instagram, and then they'll be able to, you know a little bit more about y'all. And for folks that are listening to the show, you actually had a video interview with Coach Seymour and Kobe and Jabali Breedy. So that's going to be posted on YouTube here pretty soon. So y'all be in the lookout for that as they'll be able to, you know, talk a little bit more about their background and things like that too. So we're going to be keeping in touch with all of y'all, and we're going to see, like, what's going to be going down in the AIBA championships and also with Kobe's next pro fight that's scheduled here for September. So we'll be able to get in contact with y'all. And,
James, real quick, I also want to give a shout-out to my man Jerome Quigley. Quigley is right now in Germany training for this fight on the 26th of August. So he just won a USBO title, and I think we're fighting for a USBU title over in Germany on the 26th. So he's one of my other fighters. So when I win in Germany on the 20th, 2-1, I'll be over there with Jabali on the 25th. Then I'll be with Jerome on the 26th. So I just want to give a shout-out to Jerome Quigley, you know, GQ, promoter slash, you know, boxer. He's 17-0 as a pro right now with 16 knockouts.
Yeah, he was able to get there his latest win against Luis Hernandez on July 15th over in Washington, D.C. So he's going to be going for more titles, going to Germany to see if he could get his next title there, move to 18-0 there. So, yeah, once again, shout-out to Jerome Quigley Jr., a part of the DMV boxing crew that we have out here too. So Y'all be in the lookout for news on that as well. But once again, I would like to thank all of y'all for coming into the show here, Coach Floyd Seymour, Kobe Soldier Breedy, and Jabali Breedy. And like I said, I'll be able to get more from y'all here in the future. But y'all got a lot of things coming up here ahead of y'all with the World Championships and next pro fight for Soldier Breedy. So y'all get. Well, I don't actually, you know what? I ain't even going to say that y'all get ready because y'all got a soldier in there already. So, you know, he stays ready for one. And, with the bumblebee, he's just waiting to sting somebody. So I ain't even got to say y'all got to get ready.
Yeah. Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Yes.
All right. No doubt.
Yes.
True. All right. So just getting back into, things here. Like I said, we had our guys here, Coach Floyd Seymour, from the Bahamas, of course, had to get a Bahamian in here on the show. Me being of Bahamian background, I had to, get somebody in there for that. So had him on there, and then, he was able to get me put on to Kobe the Soldier Breedy when I was, over in the MGM National Harbor. And then from there, he was able to introduce me to Kobe's younger brother, Jabali Breedy. So both of them from Barbados. So that's, something there so that we have like a little, Caribbean feel and Caribbean background, because we really don't, see that much coverage here stateside about athletes, from the Caribbean that are in boxing. You see it kind of, with track and field and other sports, but not necessarily in boxing. So we had to, basically get that in here a little bit. So I was glad that I was able to get them on. And like I said, I was going to post up a video interview with those three here pretty soon. So be sure to look out for that. Just stepped in here to the overtime section of the show. In the overtime session, I wanted to get into a preview of the undisputed light welterweight or super lightweight championship fight that will be on Saturday on ESPN, where you have Terrence Crawford going up against Julius Ndongo. And this fight is something that I've basically, been waiting for. It's something where we kind of rarely get these opportunities to have two guys going at it for the undisputed championship in their weight class. We haven't really necessarily had this since, I would say, the middleweight championship fight between Bernard Hopkins and Oscar De La Hoya. And I mean, the last unified champion that we had was Jermaine Taylor, when he was able to get the decision over Bernard Hopkins after Hopkins beat De La Hoya for all the belts. So, I mean, you have Terrence Crawford, one guy that, a lot of us consider to be the best pound for pound fighter in the sport. Was able to, win titles in multiple divisions before getting up to 140. And getting the, WBO championship and WBC championship. And Julius Ndongo is basically been a warrior. He was able to go into, people's home countries and then be able to win titles. So for him to do it yet again is just something where he's kind of like gaining respect in that part. It was like two consecutive times where he was able to do it, because like at the end of 2016, he fought for the IBF and IBO super lightweight championships and was able to knock out Troyanovsky pretty much, fairly quickly in that fight in Moscow. And then he went over to Glasgow, Scotland to fight Ricky Burns, who was, had an extensive background, very well known in the sport of boxing, and he was able to get the unanimous decision over Ricky Burns. And so here it is, his third fight where he goes into somebody's, you know, home country. This time he's going to Lincoln, Nebraska to face Terrence Crawford for all of these super lightweight titles. Both of these guys undefeated, with Ndongo 22-0, Terrence Crawford 31-0. You know, and Crawford is, you know, there is, you know, former lightweight championship, and then got the super lightweight championships there, and was able to defeat Victor Postol pretty much in a blowout unanimous decision win to get the WBC super lightweight championships, and defend that a couple of times here before this fight coming up on August 19th against Julius Ndongo. So I wanted to see, Mike Grady, if you wanted to comment to this fight here real quick.
Yeah. So, you know, I was looking at how Ndongo made his rise and, you know, just kind of him being like a road warrior and pretty much going to everybody else's hometown and pretty much beating them. And it sort of put me in the mind of Saki Obika. If you remember, there was a stretch when Saki Obika was fighting all the good fighters, you know, and even though he came up short in some of the fights, you knew yeah. that he was there to win. And, you know, he didn't come – I mean, some of the fights he actually won, and, you know, he was a contender fighter, so most people didn't have a lot of, you know, expectations from the contender fighters. But I gained a lot of respect from Saki Obika watching him, you know, fight and knowing that every time he fought, he would give it his all. And so style-wise, they're different, but, you know, it just kind of put me in the mind of a Saki Obika. But the difference is, well, I guess when Saki Obika fought Andre Ward, so that's similar to this, I guess. But, and Ndongo fighting the dog, you know. I watched a couple of his fights, or at least one for sure, and part of another one. And, I mean, he does a couple things that I think will get him in trouble. Well, I guess I'll speak on the stuff that he does well. I mean, you know, he know how to use his distance. I mean, he can jab with the best of them, and, you know, he know how to, like, extend himself. You know, like, he can get the most out of his frame, I guess. But he have his hands down at times, and I'm not sure against Terrence Crawford that would be smart.
Yeah, that would be a good move. Yeah.
But he does have dynamite.
Yeah, especially with somebody that can, you know, switch from southpaw to orthodox like Crawford can do. He's a very versatile guy, and the thing about this is that, you know, he's, you know, with Crawford, I mean, he's there at orthodox, but he can fight southpaw. So I'm gonna be interested to see how Crawford is going to approach the fight here, if he's going to actually switch to southpaw against the southpaw here, and then see if he could try his luck doing that for a few rounds here and there. I mean, to me, I kind of like see it as a little bit of a surprise that, you know, Crawford is this much of a favorite against Ndongo. But yeah, I think that's kind of to the point where, you know, like you said, you know, pretty much like a lot of people haven't really seen Ndongo other than the two fights where he was able to win those titles. So that's why, you know, a lot of people are kind of like buying into what Crawford is, you know, basically selling here. But, I mean, the resume also, you know, factors a lot into it with him being a huge favorite. I'm kind of like, you know, I'm kind of like seeing here where – hold on, what was that?
Oh, I can finish listening to you. I'll remember what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, it's like – I think it's just something to where here in this – in this matchup, a lot of people are going to hopefully a lot of people are going to see, you know, how Ndongo is in this fight against Terrence Crawford. And if Terrence Crawford is able to, you know, defeat somebody like an Ndongo, who, you know, is somebody that's like not afraid to go into hostile territory and try to get the win against somebody. But to me, with the guys that he fought with, Chorianovsky and with Ricky Burns, those guys are not, you know, as good as Terrence Crawford. And the thing with Crawford is that, I mean, he's already, you know, defeated Ricky Burns for a lightweight championship years ago. So, I mean, it's just something here to, you know, I would like to see if Mondongo is going to be able to see how talented that, you know, Crawford is, and if he's going to be able to make adjustments to kind of like, I think, to me, he kind of like should have to use his distance, but I don't know if that's going to be something to where he's going to make it an outstanding advantage there. I mean, it's like he has like the reach advantage of like 1.5 inches, so I'm not sure if that's going to be significant enough to try to keep somebody like Terrence Crawford at bay, unless if he has like some type of power between his with his left hand there in this case.
Which is what I was going to speak on. Of course Terrence Crawford should be favored in this fight, but what Ndongo has going for him is that Terrence Crawford at times is there to be hit. Times he get hit clean at times. And from them two fights in Dungo fought, I mean, like he got dynamite in his hands, and, you know, he get good torque on his shots too. So, I mean, if he hit clean, I mean, he could possibly hurt him. But, you know, Terrence Crawford is definitely is like Bruce Lee. He's a formless fighter. I mean, he definitely changed his style to combat his opponent, you know. And I think that's going well for him. So it would be interesting to see how he approaches this fight.
True. I mean, in I think like here it's going to be interesting to see how the result is going to be in this particular fight, because you have Terrence Crawford there that's basically on the brink of, you know, being one of the most popular boxers out there in the sport. But the division that he's in is kind of like he's already done what he's had to do against the most notable fighters within that division. So if he's able to, you know, get into this fight against Ndongo, get the win against Ndongo, and if he's able to get a convincing win against Ndongo, then it's like there's nothing much left for him at the 140-pound division. So his thing is to move up, and, you know, 147 has a lot of fighters out there, but it's the matter about it is who would he be able to fight there at 147 pounds? I mean, we do have that, you know, announcement about, you know, Manny Pacquiao getting a rematch against Jeff Horn. I wanted to go the Stephen A. route with that one, but I'm not going to do it. So Manny Pacquiao has that rematch against Jeff Horn for the WBO welterweight championship. And if Terrence Crawford ends up getting all the belts here at super lightweight, then he may just end up moving up to welterweight. It's just a matter of who will he fight at welterweight to basically get his feet wet in there. I don't think it will be against the winner of Pacquiao and Horn, but you have guys like Jesse Vargas out there. Maybe Lucas Matisse will still be floating out there, and a couple of other fighters that may be available within that weight class that he could test the waters in 147 with before getting an opportunity against some of the more notable fighters in 147 pounds.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. He said if he wins against Ndongo, he's the number one pound-for-pound fighter. Agree or disagree?
Well, I disagree. I have to put in Ward as number one, basically because of what he did to Sergey Kovalev. And the thing about it is that with Kovalev, there are some people that kind of knew about Kovalev and that in that first fight between him and Andre Ward, they kind of picked Ward because they knew what Kovalev could do and what he could not do. But the fact that Ward was able to move up to light heavyweight, have a few fights at light heavyweight before fighting the guy that many people considered to be the number one guy at light heavyweight and defeat him then, and then in the rematch, basically, you know, bully him, overwhelm him, and ended up, you know, getting a knockout, technical knockout against him. So I have to put Ward at number one right now and still put Ward at number one, even if Crawford gets this win against Julius Ndongo.
And I agree. I mean Crawford coming in at a strong number two for me. You know, like, after this win, he's still going to be a strong number two because, yeah, Ward, like you said, and then not to mention Ward beat a what's the Cuban name who dismantled who broke the dude's jaw? Yeah, what's the Cuban? I forgot his name. Who broke Joe Smith's jaw?
Barrera.
Yeah.
Sullivan Barrera.
And then, you know, so Ward dominated Sullivan Barrera. And he also, in the rematch, he dominated Kovalev. And then, you know, in another division, he dominated everybody in that division. That cannot be overlooked. You know, like, I know what is the what have you done. With Floyd not fighting, it goes to Andre Ward. And you know, if Terrence Crawford unifies this division and then he does something similar to what Ward does, like currently now, then yeah, you consider Terrence Crawford, but right now definitely goes to Ward.
Yeah. And to me, it's not like there's going to be, you know, any situation to where Crawford could get that opportunity to, you know, either, you know, move up and then fight a notable guy at welterweight. Cause I've said this for a while. I just don't think that Bob Arum will allow Crawford to fight Manny Pacquiao. He would probably end up fighting Jeff Horn more than Manny Pacquiao. So it's like, what else can Terrence Crawford do in order to basically prove himself, you know, I would say within Top Rank, because not only do I not think that Arum would not have him face Manny Pacquiao, I don't think he would have him face Vasyl Lomachenko if Lomachenko moved up to 140 pounds. And to me, that kind of like says you got the most talented guy that you have in your stable. You're not even giving him the opportunities to show that he's the most talented guy in your stable. And it's almost like he's doing it intentionally. I mean, sometimes it's part of the business of the sport, but I mean, come on, man, he's one of the best boxers out there in the sport. Let him, you know, show that to the world by fighting guys that are, you know, that you've already given a shot to, or that have, you know, been able to build themselves a resume. You know, Manny Pacquiao's built himself a resume, but, you know, now it's kind of like seeming like he's on the downside of his career. So why not, you know, have somebody else take over as that guy within those weight classes? And to me, I mean, I'm not certain of this, but Manny Pacquiao's contract with Top Rank may expire at the end of this year. So for him to have that rematch against Jeff Horn, that may end up being his last fight under Top Rank. So I'm like, why would you have that rematch happen with, you know, Jeff Horn, but not give the opportunity to Terrence Crawford? But I mean, that's pretty much how I feel about it.
Yeah. And to Pacquiao's defense, sort of, everybody in Pacquiao's generation is retiring or has already retired in some form.
Right.
Pacquiao ain't finna fight Crawford. Like I get it. I would love to see that torch be passed, but I feel like the people who Pacquiao fought, they all gone now. And so what, he going to fight one of these young dogs? Not happening. I mean, if he don't be done after this fight, then, I mean, he would have to fight like a Adrian Broner or something, you know, like it would, it ain't too many people. And I'm only saying that because of, you know, his activity with winning the fight, you know. And then Broner would bring numbers, too. Broner would bring numbers.
Broner brings numbers and ratings there. So, I mean, that kind of, like, you know, goes into how much money would be able to be generated if that matchup was going to happen. But other than that, you know, it just doesn't seem like there's anything much else out there for Manny Pacquiao, like you said. As like a last note here for this episode, you were talking about, you know, the guys in Manny Pacquiao's era retiring. You know, over the past couple of weeks or so, we've seen or heard the announcements of a lot of notable people saying that they're going to be hanging up their gloves. So, I mean, you start out with, you know, Timothy Bradley there. You have Juan Manuel Marquez that said that, you know, he's going to be hanging up the gloves. And, you know, we have, you know, former heavyweight champion Vladimir Klitschko as, you know, somebody that announced his retirement over the last week, the previous week, before August 5th. And also one other announcement was made that Miguel Cotto said that at the end of this year, he's going to hang it up. So we had a good number of notable boxers that have hung up their gloves or made that announcement here over the past couple of weeks, you know, here over in the States, over in Ukraine, and over in the Orient in Japan. A couple of notable guys there said that they're going to be hanging up their gloves. So, in the next few years or so, that Boxing Hall of Fame there is going to be pretty much filled up with very notable fighters. But going over a few of those guys that, you know, retired, of course, you had Vladimir Klitschko that, you know, had his reign as heavyweight champion for, you know, a decade plus. He was, you know, able to dominate the heavyweight division. And, you know, while, you know, a lot of people said that, you know, his reign was kind of like, you know, semi-boring or whatever it is, it's just that there was, you know, a lot of people that are out there that stepped up to him, and they weren't able to, you know, close the show or, you know, get it done against them. I know a lot of people kind of like point back to those times where he was able to be upset against Corey Sanders, where he got knocked out, and then a year later being defeated by Lehman Brewster. But ever since that loss to Lehman Brewster in 2004, he went through a run where he was able to defeat, you know, the likes of David Haye, Samuel Peter, Ruslan Chagyev, Haseem Rahman, Tony the Tiger Thompson, Sultan Abrajimov, Calvin Brock, Chris Bird. It was like a very and also like Alexander Povetkin. So he went like what was that, 2004 until the fight against Tyson Fury in 2015, where he was able to be the heavyweight champion until then. So that is a long run to be 11 years or so a world champion. I don't think that's something that's going to be matched by anybody as far as, like, you know, in the heavyweight division or pretty much in any other division. I just don't think that that's going to happen here anytime soon.
Not in this era.
What's that?
I said definitely not in this era, no.
Nah, not in this era. So I think that's going to be the defining thing that people will remember about Vladimir Klitschko. Going into, you know, Juan Manuel Marquez, I mean, Marquez to me was, you know, one of my favorite fighters. Not because of, you know, his rivalry with Manny Pacquiao, but, you know, He's had a lot of notable fights other than that. I mean, he was able to, you know, fight you know, guys like, I mean, he had the Timothy Bradley fight. He had the Floyd Mayweather fight. He was able to have that Casamayor fight was a very good one as well. To me, I think that was that Casamayor fight. To me, I think that one was the one where I kind of like sided more with him on that one, because that one was a good back and forth fight. After he got that split decision loss against Manny Pacquiao, where, you know, a lot of people thought he kind of like won that fight, and he was able to get the, like, after that win against Casamayor, he fought for multiple lightweight championships against Juan Diaz was a fairly good fighter there at lightweight, and he was able to be the grittier guy against someone that was, you know, a lot younger than he was, and ended up getting the TKO victory there in that particular fight. And then he was able to move up to get that fight against Floyd Mayweather Jr. But even with that, he still had his fight against Katsidis in 2010. And that last fight he had against Mike Alvarado, after that, he was, you know, he had the whole thing with injuries and, you know, the back and forth thing with if he was using stuff. But he's had like a fairly decorated career, you know, at featherweight, super featherweight, lightweight, all the way up to welterweight. So, you know, that was something there with Juan Manuel Marquez. Anything you would like to say about Klitschko and Marquez before I like go into the other guys?
I mean, all these guys are retiring, definitely going to be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, you're right, the 10-year run ain't going to be touched no time soon, unless, you know, it's not going to be touched. You're right, because now they cracking down on steroids too. It's not about to be touched, and then people are just getting taller. You know, it's the era of the super heavyweights now. It's not 6'2" mm-hmm. people out there doing their thing. It's 6'7" people doing their thing. That ain't finna be touched. I mean, they'll touch each other, but you know, it just ain't gonna last. You know, everybody gonna beat everybody. Right. As far as Marquez, I mean, the dude, the champion, man. I think he's a fighter that I'll go back and watch his fights and just kind of see what I can learn from him. You know, just style wise, temperament wise. Mm-hmm. And, I just go back and do that, look at fighters and see their progression and just be, like, amazed on how they kind of do their thing. And, you know, maybe pick up a thing or two from them in my in my observing boxing, because I'll never try to box again, but yes.
Right. Yep. And like I said, the other two guys that I mentioned, Miguel Cotto and Timothy Bradley. With those two guys, I'm going to start with Timothy Bradley first. His run at 140 pounds is pretty much, I think, is underrated. I mean, yeah, he wasn't, you know, able to fight a couple of guys there at 140, like Danny Garcia or Amir Khan. But, I mean, he was still able to, you know, be able to get the super lightweight championships. He fought Junior Witter. He fought Edna Cherry, Kendall Holt, Nate Campbell, and Lamont Peterson in that run. And also in 2011, Devin Alexander for the WBC and WBO super lightweight championships. And, you know, was also to get the win against Joel Casamayor before getting that Manny Pacquiao fight welterweight. So, I mean, you know, having that run in super lightweight was very notable. I haven't really seen that many boxers have that type of run at a division where they had, like, a lot of tough guys going at it back to back to back. And, you know, at welterweight, he was able to have the three fights against Manny Pacquiao. He got the win over Juan Manuel Marquez, and of course, the Provodnikov fight that, you know, basically I think took a lot out of him there. So, He's going to be, yeah, like you said, like with all of the ones that I mentioned, he's going to be there as a member of the Boxing Hall of Fame. And then you have Miguel Cotto, who also had like a great run there at 140 pounds and 147 pounds before moving up to, you know, get championships at light, middleweight, and middleweight there. So, I mean, to me, I think Miguel Cotto, you know, him recently, I think he like recently signed with Golden Boy Promotions. He has this upcoming fight against Yoshihiro Kamagai on the 26th of August, and then he'll probably have, you know, one more fight here in 2017 before he hangs up his gloves. Like I said, he won the middleweight championship against Sergio Martinez. We all know what happened with that. Was able to get the fights against Floyd Mayweather Jr. His two fights against Antonio Margarito were very notable. Shane Mosley fight, Zab Judah at welterweight, Carlos Quintana, Paulie Malignaggi at super lightweight. And so, I mean, to me, I think his run compared to like Timothy Bradley, where Timothy Bradley was at 140, I think Miguel Cotto had that type of run at the 147-pound division, you know, before moving up to super welterweight and then, you know, eventually middleweight there. So he's going to be, you know, basically a shoo-in for a Hall of Fame, one of the most popular fighters within the era of, you know, 2005 to 2015.
Yeah, you know, Bradley, man, I was big on him ever since watching him, you know, with that run at 140. And, I hate saying if and all that stuff, but I think his career could have been more glorious if he didn't re-sign with Top Rank for that second time.
Mm.
You know, after he beat Marquez, if he'd have went walking and, you know, he would have had the opportunity to fight Floyd. I know he said he was sad, well, he regretted that he didn't fight Floyd or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But had he not signed with them, he would have got an opportunity to fight Floyd, because at that point, after he beat Pacquiao, even though he was changed mentally, and then after he beat Marquez, he was still, I think that was before he fought Provodnikov, right? He was still, like, sound. Like,
The Provodnikov fight was in between the first Pacquiao and the Marquez fight.
Okay. Yeah. So, nevertheless, you know, the Provodnikov fight took a lot out of him because he fought that one like he had something to prove. But
mm-hmm.
I think that Tim Bradley who fought Pacquiao would have given Floyd a run for his money. He wouldn't have won, but he would have at least given him a run for his money. Because, you know, Tim would go out in his shield, and he'll you know, he the same you mm-hmm. saw with Provodnikov, he'll die on his shield. I don't, you know, say do that, but, yeah. And then, of course, we know with Cotto, man, like you said, he'll shoe in for the Hall of Fame. I enjoyed watching him. I'll probably go back and watch Cotto's fights too, you know, just to, you know, kind of see his progression as well too. But all these guys, man, they mm-hmm. all of them getting in the Hall of Fame.
Yep. I mean, to me, I think, you know, with Bradley, I wanted to see what he would have done, not after he got that first, you know, Top Rank contract. I wanted to see if he could sign with, you know, somebody that was in that whole little stable there, where he could have fought Amir Khan, the likes of Amir Khan, or Sean Porter, or actually at the time it would have been Amir Khan or Danny Garcia, or you know, somebody like that. You know, he got Lamont Peterson, but I would have liked to, you know, seen him against guys that were pretty much in that little bracket there before the other guys came up. The Sean Porters came up, the Errol Spencers came up before Keith Thurman came up. you know, he would have been able to see if he would have tried his luck with those guys, because I think he would have been able to get a couple of lucrative fights with, you know, an Americano or Danny Garcia there before having that opportunity to fight a Floyd Mayweather. So I kind of like see him as somebody that could have beaten the likes of Americano or beaten the likes of a Danny Garcia and then getting that lucrative fight against Floyd Mayweather Jr. instead of, you know, going straight at it with the Manny Pacquiao fight there. So, I mean, to me, with Timothy Bradley, he has that decorated career, but it's like almost like a what if, because there was like, at that time, there were so many talented guys that were at 140 and 147, and a lot of them were trying to, like, kind of like moving up from 140 to 147 to where he could have been able to fight those guys. Lucas Matisse was the other guy that I wanted to see if he was going to be able to try his luck on that. But I think that Matisse fight would have been, well, I hope it wouldn't have been, it would probably have been kind of like the Ruslan Provodnikov fight. I wouldn't think that Bradley would kind of approach that fight against Matisse at that time like a Provodnikov fight, because Matisse was like a very dangerous fighter there, specifically, you know, after him getting that win over Lamont Peterson before fighting Danny Garcia for those junior welterweight belts back in 2013. But yeah, like I said, with Bradley, he's kind of like there, etched in stone as one of those guys that kind of like fought anybody that he could fight at 140 pounds and was able to fight a couple of the notable guys at 147 and at least get one win against Manny Pacquiao and defeat Juan Manuel Marquez too. So that kind of like puts him as, you know, one of those guys that was among the best within those two weight classes during that time. And yeah, with Miguel Cotto, he's like one of the most, you know, decorated fighters in the sport, especially modern day, you know, having the, you know, the junior welterweight championship, super welterweight championship, and defeating Sergio Martinez for the WBC middleweight belt before ended up losing it to Canelo there back in 2015. So, yeah, both of those guys I think are going to be shoo-ins for Hall of Fame as well. You know, so basically on that note, with the overtime section on the show, I'm going to close this episode. Once again, I would like to thank Floyd Seymour for coming in to speak with us with his boxers that he's training, Cobia and Javali Breedy coming out of Barbados. So I'd like to shout out Barbados representing here, and of course, shouting out the Bahamas there with my guy, Floyd Seymour. So I'd like to thank them again for being part of this show. Of course, you have our guy here, Mike Grady. Always, always welcome to talk boxing here on this show. Great contributor here, so I'd like to thank him for that. And y'all be sure to catch us here. Our next episode will be next Sunday, 7:30 p.m. Here on the same channel. So, like I say, the end of every show, Point of Boxing is the hit, not get hit, not the standing trade. On that note, I'm out. Have a good evening.